Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and I'm very excited about today's guest. He is the founder and current artistic director of the New Line Theater in St. Louis. He has been working in musical theater since 1978 and has been directing musicals since 1981. He's written multiple books, music, and lyrics for 9 musical and 2 plays, and his recent book is called The Theater Cats, which is a parody of T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which is why he's here today. So welcome, Scott Miller, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I am excited. I definitely got cued to your book and bought it and read it and thoroughly enjoyed reading kind of a musical parody of Cats, you know, of the poem of Cats, as somebody who's kind of spent a lot of time thinking about the story of Cats. And so I'm excited to have you here. But before we get into the book and Cats, I want to hear, you have a really deep like background in theater. So tell me a little bit about like New Line Theater and your experience kind of writing and being in this world.
I literally have been in love with musicals since before I can remember, like really, you know, like I knew all the lyrics to My Fair Lady when I was, you know, 4 years old. And my family had a lot of cast albums in the family collection, you know, so I grew up with that stuff and I've always been in love with it. And so, you know, as soon as I could, I was in musicals in high school and, senior year, I wrote a musical for the first time and we did it at the high school. And so that kind of turned me from wanting to be an actor to wanting to be a director and writer. And went off to college, kept doing it. Then in the early 90s, I was working with a community theater back here after college. And I really wanted to get adventurous. And the musical theater itself was starting to get really adventurous. And so I broke off and started New Line. It's primarily about doing shows that are a little less mainstream. You know, a lot of what we do has been on or off Broadway, but most of it failed on or off Broadway. So we're doing the shows that aren't really commercial, but are brilliant and wonderful.
Wow. So I actually was wondering, because I looked at the history of your theater and you've not done Cats. And I was wondering, you know,
no,
this is, I guess maybe too mainline here.
Well, and also it's like such a dance musical, you know, and we do musicals with dance, but we don't really do dance musicals. You know, for me, it's all about content. It's all about story. So I enjoyed Cats the first time I saw it. It's, you know, I've gotten a little over it since then, but it's never been something I really wanted to work on, you know, as a director.
Got it. Okay. So are you from St. Louis? You're from the St. Louis area growing up. Okay. Yep. So you're like me, I'm from Indiana, where, you know, we had a little bit coming through every year. I think you've got the Muni there's right. Like you got a big theater.
Yeah. So when I was growing up, that was 11 shows a summer at the Muni.
Wow. Yeah. We get about five a year in Indiana. And so that was kind of always like what's rolling through. I think, you know, this past week when we're recording this, Pretty Woman was on tour there.
Yeah.
But you never know what's actually going to make it. And so I'd never seen Cats in the however many times it stopped by. But so you're in high school. Okay. So you're high school and you kind of say, I want to be a director and a writer. And you started really kind of digging in and you took that through college. And then that's how the New Line Theater kind of came to about.
Well, and also a little thing that was kind of cool, I went to Harvard, and so I was up in Boston, and there was this astonishing variety of used record stores. So my 4 years in college, I acquired like 400 or 500 cast albums. So I was really kind of like teaching myself, you know, the literature of my art form, kind of.
So how many of those were Cats? Did you have any?
I did have the Broadway Cats.
Okay, so your original cast. Okay, original Broadway cast album.
And I have to say, when I first started listening to it, I really liked it. Like, some of the music is really unusual and kind of challenging. Like, you know, Skimble Shanks is in 13. That's really kind of fun for me as a musician. And like I said, the first time I saw it, I thought it was really cool because I was up close and, you know. But, yeah, so.
So So where was that first viewing? Like, where were you? When was it?
I was in college, and it was the first stop of the first national tour in Boston.
Okay, so this is the tour. I think it'd technically be tour three, is what they called it.
Okay.
And because they got weird names, they're on tour six now, but six was pre and post pandemic, in the U.S. So tour three, and you're in Boston. Okay, and so you're in college.
Yeah.
And what was that? What was that like? I know, you know, before we started, you said that there's, you know, everything is a little bit better experience for cats if you maybe had an enhancement before you go see the show. Did you partake in that before in college, or did you go in sober?
I was not yet a stoner, and so I saw it stone cold sober. But one of the things was the seats we had were right on a cross aisle in the audience. And so the cats were coming right up to us, you know, when they were out in the house. And, you know, I was close enough to see that, you know, amazing giant garbage on stage and everything, you know. And so the experience, like, was really cool for me because I was relatively close. I was kind of in the experience, you know.
Yeah. And so so did you know that they were coming into the house? Because I didn't, and it scared the living daylights out of me.
I did not. No,
okay.
But what was also cool is, you know, we were fairly close up, but you could look behind you and see them crawling on the balcony railing and stuff, you know, that was cool.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that. I was at a matinee and I was not ready for them to be all around me. I was thankfully two seats in or three seats in, so I didn't get like completely green eye in my face, bombarded. But yeah, I love that. Okay. Cause it sounds like similar experience. Yeah. I was close. It was pretty early on. It was a preview of the Broadway revival and I felt like I was mesmerized by the set, and then the lights go down and all of a sudden to my right is eyes flashing in my face and I was terrified.
And the other thing, have you seen that book, A Cat's Diary?
No.
It's one of the actors published this diary about working on the show. And the thing that I thought was so wonderful about it was that the early rehearsals were all about acting. They were all about cat behavior. It was all improv, you know, being cats, how do cats interact? What happens when a stranger comes over? Like all those things about being cats, they took it really, really seriously. And so I think early on, the show was a different show than it is now.
Yeah, it is kind of a wild, like, the progression of it. And now that I've interviewed so many different cast members, I've also noticed everybody has a different take on their character, the story. Yeah. It's like, it's very loose, which is, I think, some of the fun of it, which I'm sure as a writer is also probably super fun for you to kind of go in and be able to take this, like, there's a lot to work with here.
Yeah, and, you know, my idea for the book was, part of what I love about cats is, it's not just talking about cats, right? It's talking about people too. And totally. and so I thought that's really cool. And instead of a book of poems about the quirks of people, how about a book of poems about the quirks of theater people?
Yeah.
You know, which is, to me, of course, extra funny. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, that's really, that'll work. And so I tried one as a experiment, see if I could do it. And so I wrote Merminaniac the Skrelty Cat. And by the end of it, I was laughing at things I had written and I was like, yeah, I think I can do this.
Yeah. I mean, they landed, and especially I'll tell you what I appreciate about it is when I got it and I started reading it, I immediately was saying, oh no, I'm not a theater person.
Right.
Am I going to get most of this? Like, how much of this is going to go over my head and how much of this is going to be there? And I got a lot of it. And so it's like, yeah, I'm not going to know the nuances of some of it that a theater lover is going to love. And there were some where I was just like, oh, this is still really clever. And this is great. So like, I was going to say the ones that jumped out to me when I was reading it is the triple threat, the director, the casting, like some of these things, especially as I've heard more about like the real life experiences of these actors. It's like it seems like you nailed a couple of these super well, and it's fun. So I encourage anybody, well, you know, the link will be to get the book will be in the description here, but I encourage everyone to go read it. And like, especially if you're a theater person to pull out some of these like nuances, I'm sure there's going to be one or two. It's like the show, one or two is like going to be like, oh man, that just absolutely nailed exactly my experience. with this.
And you know, some of the poems are essentially a composite of, you know, lots of people I've worked with or known or whatever. A few of the poems are really about a single person, and I will never tell who they are. but it's very funny to me because I read them and I think, oh my God, is that person going to recognize themselves? You know?
Yeah. Have you been called out yet? Has anybody, out to you?
Okay. No. Although, you know, the ones that are really based on a specific person are the kind of less generous ones. So I'm not sure they'd want to recognize themselves.
Yeah. Okay. I know a couple that might be there, but I wasn't saying, here's who this is. Which
I also have this kind of secret agenda underneath. You know, there's this amazing growing fan base for musical theater, for Broadway musicals, that didn't used to be around. And I really want to, like, feed that fan base, because I remember me being a high school musical theater freak, you know, and how awesome that was. And so part of the secret agenda here is also kind of to teach a little bit about making musicals. And so the first poem and the last poem are relatively serious. You know, the casting of Cats and the directing of Cats. And there are just little things every once in a while in the book that I'm just trying to get a point across about, you know, respecting musical theater and that kind of thing. So it's kind of underneath, but it's there.
I'm curious which one of these was the most challenging to write. Like, which one did you open up the book and say, oh, this one's going to be hard to parody on?
The one, and I almost didn't do it. I almost left it out. It's the battle of the Snackheads and Whisker Cats.
That it's hard. That's a hard one to go in. It's a hard one to kind of like follow in the musical as well. And it's I thought your version of it was super clever though.
Well, thank you. It's a weird form. It's weird rhyme scheme. Long. And it's the only one where I really had to tell a narrative. Like that one has to be a story, not just a description of someone. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with it. I worked on it a really long time and I kept thinking, well, that's okay. Like I could go with that, but I would like it to be better. So I kept tweaking.
And so this is, I know you've written multiple books. Was this your first kind of foray into poems?
Yes, sort of. I've written two shows where I take a Gilbert and Sullivan score and write entirely new book lyrics to it. So that was good practice for this, you know, because I had to stick to their rhythms and rhyme scheme and everything. But this is the first time I ever did like straight. Actually, not that I say that. I wrote a collection of horror stories that are connected to musical theater. And one of those is a parody of The Raven. So that is the one other time that I actually attempted poetry. And it's hard. Okay. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And what's hardest about it is making sure that you can only read it the way I want it to read. You know, to make sure the rhythm is not ambiguous at all, that you can't read it wrong. And it's hard.
Yeah, it's a famous book too, you know, taking some of that. I did a memory parody and even that was hard of like keeping some of the lyrics that are focal points, but also being able to get enough across to make the joke.
And every once in a while, I wanted to leave a word or a phrase of Eliot's, you know, to reference it to kind of, you know, as a fun little Easter egg kind of.
Exactly. So I'm curious with this watching, like having read this now and knowing that it's a little hard because the musical doesn't actually have Grisabelle. The book's not, Grisabelle's not in the book, isn't not in the original book.
Right.
If you were taking this book and turning your book into Cats 2, how are you weaving that story together?
Wow, that's a really good question. I guess I wouldn't do it all that differently. I mean, there's no real story, you know. It's a snapshot. It's community. It's a character study, which usually doesn't hold your attention. But I guess, you know, all the weird, crazy stuff here, yeah, you know, helps hold your attention.
Totally. Okay, so if that's the case, then who in your book is going to be the Jellicle choice?
Well, it's going to be my parallel to Grisabella, which is Razzle Jazzy the Diva Cat.
Okay.
And I think because she's kind of pathetic, like, I feel like she's got to. Totally. That's how I feel about Grisabella. I feel so sorry for her. Everybody's, like, making fun of her and shit, you know?
Totally. Yeah, well, okay, well, we'll get into the Grisabella argument at the end here. You gotta sit tight there. Right. I do want to hear a little bit more now about your, you know, how many, like, I know you've seen the show, and you obviously tackled this. Like, what is your Cats level of fandom? Like, if someone asks you about the actual musical, do you go in and say, like, pre this book, was it a show that you loved, hated, or was this just kind of like you saw a really strong vehicle, took a crack at it, and created this really amazing thing?
That's a good question. I think I would say I'm a huge fan of the Broadway cast recording.
Yeah. Okay.
And a medium fan of the show itself.
Medium fan. You're the only person in the middle.
I think if a production of the show really takes the acting seriously and really takes the cat behavior and the characters and all seriously, I think it makes a much better show.
Have you seen one that has? I mean, I've only seen, my experience is the 1998 movie on an iPad, and 2016 revival twice,
right?
And that's really it. I mean, it's on tour now, but it's not anywhere near where I'm going to be able to see it.
Right.
I didn't know anything about it pre 2016 at all. So my knowledge is limited, but everyone I've talked to, it's like everyone talks about Felinity School and their three words and all this, like the fact that they become cats. So I'm curious if you experienced one, and without maybe calling out the production, where it didn't feel like it was taken as serious.
I've seen a couple of tours, you know, more recently, last 10 years or whatever, where, you know, the dancing is great and the singing is great, but they're not doing a show. They're doing a dance concert.
Okay.
Which is fine. You know, it's great songs. Cause I really do. I love the music. And yeah, I love the lyrics. T.S. Eliot, how can you go wrong? But it's a show that you can't disrespect it, or it sucks.
Interesting. I mean, I'm going to ask you when we hang up, when we stop recording, because I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, because I've probably talked to somebody on the show that you saw. But I'm very curious now which ones you thought kind of mailed it in. You're the first person I've ever met ever since I've been doing this now for 2.5 years that is in the middle of the road. Everyone is love or hate. There's no, it's like, it's either it's your favorite show and you are a super fan and it's like a part of your growing up in Aura, or you think it's the dumbest thing you've ever seen and you hated every minute of it and you can't explain why. I've yet to find anybody to explain why. It's just like not their cup of tea and that's it. You're the first one that's kind of gone in the middle.
Well, you know, the first time I heard it, it's probably like, you know, 81, 82, whatever. I was thrilled by it. I mean, you know, I was already a huge fan of Jesus Christ Superstar in Evita. I like Joseph. I don't think it's amazing, but I like it a lot. It's very clever. I was ready to like Cats, and I loved the recording. And I think under ideal circumstances, I love it live. You know, the first time I saw it in Boston, I loved it. But I think it's one of those shows that you can't disrespect. There are a lot like that. Jesus Christ Superstar, and there are a bunch of them where if you phone it in, the audience will accept it. But it's not great unless you really, really treat it with respect and really take it seriously.
This is such a director answer. I love it.
It is.
It's the, I've watched, I'm the director here. I know what's happening. And this group isn't giving it today. And that's like, or just, you know, they might not care. I've found the parallels. And I mean, you can see behind me here, but I'm very much more into sports than I am theater. And it's like the NBA, which is a lot of what I watch, basketball. The players sometimes get criticized for mailing in regular season games. It's like, you know, you're going to spend a lot of money to go watch them play. And it's like, they kind of give half effort, but you're still watching the best players in the world do something that you have zero chance of doing. I can't think. And so it's like, it feels like kind of that same thing you're saying. Like, look, I know what great looks like. I know that this is still incredibly good performing and a crazy show and great lyrics and everything. But I know that you're just kind of like, you're on tour. You're just kind of giving it today just because you have to be out there.
Well, and I think, and maybe it's the nature of the beast, but I think most commercial musical theater doesn't take the time or effort to understand and respect the work. You know, we've done a lot of shows that were disasters on Broadway, like disasters, Crybaby, High Fidelity, stuff like that, that get nothing but rave reviews when we do them, because we don't try to make them funny. We don't try to give them spectacle for the tourists. You know, we just like take the story and tell the story seriously, and then it's a great show. And it drives me crazy, because there are a lot of people in commercial theater who are like, how can we thrill the audience, instead of what is this story we're going to tell and how do we tell it well?
I mean, well, I guess that becomes an interesting piece, and I can probably say more than most people because I'm not in the industry, but like, is that the business of it? Of the, like, you kind of have to play to the tourists a little bit to keep the ticket sales coming in. And if not, they, you know, I've seen a couple things that I had wanted to see even before I moved to New York that didn't make it through previews or didn't make it there that I was really interested in seeing. And clearly I was the minority.
Yeah, well, and yeah, because so much of the audience is tourists now. And, you know, you pay $700 for an orchestra seat. Like, that's that's crazy. You know, I remember a few years ago saw Bloody Andrew Jackson on Broadway. And it's this really, like, aggressive, confrontational, crazy show. And I sat there enjoying it immensely and thinking, these tourists hate this. And sure enough, it closed really fast, and then we got to do it, and we had a blast with it, you know? But it's like, it is about families and tourists, you know, what do they want to see? And what do the producers think they want to see?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I do think I'm like, I always use my dad, my mom's much more into musical theater, as a bar of like, would they enjoy this?
Yeah.
And same for me. I now know a lot more than I used to. And now I live in New York, so it's a lot easier to go to see a lot of stuff on random times and a little bit easier to get tickets.
Right.
But I'm not knowledgeable. I ask a lot of my friends who work in theater, and people I saw, you know, today I was with somebody works in theater. And I was like, they talked about something that was a little bit more offbeat. And I'm like, would I enjoy that? And I'm like, take that eyes of like, hey, know that I don't go to everything. I don't go to all the shows. Like, you know, a lot of my friends do now. And I'm like, which one would I be entertained by? Which one would I? And so I do think that there is a lens of like, it has to be a little bit that way, because the New Yorkers can't all go every day, unfortunately. And so you do have to rely on the ticket sales from tourists and other, even I would say less like theater enthusiasts is probably the better term for it. Someone who's just going to a show or two a year.
Yeah. I mean, I would say two things. One is audiences don't only like what's safe and familiar. Audiences love what's great, you know?
Yep.
And so you can challenge them and surprise them and still be awesome and still be a hit, you know? And the other thing, I have to throw in a little self-plug, if you don't mind.
Please.
One of my books totally addresses you. It's called The ABCs of Broadway Musicals, and it's this small format, like, overview of the entire art form. Like, who are the important people? What are the important genres? You know, what good videos to check out? Here are some documentaries, just to kind of give you an overview of the art form.
I love it. I will check it out, but I also am hesitant to check it out because I really like the fact that the only thing I know about theater is the story of cats.
It's cats.
And I know one thing better than 99% of the world, and I don't know anything about the rest.
Yes.
And it's a nice, pleasant world to live in. You know, I'm a little ignorant in the sense, like, now jokingly, that I can kind of just live in my little bubble here and only think about cats and the rest of stuff. But I do appreciate you're doing a lot of work for the people, like for everyone who wants to learn about it and needs to learn about it. And I think more than just the me's, there's also the people that are, you know, students who are getting into it. Like, what do they need to know if they're entering this world and weren't involved in it as a super fan growing up?
Yeah, I think a lot about me as a high school musical theater kid, you know, and what would thrill me, what would make me happy. And also this ABCs book, partly it's for, you know, parents of theater majors and, you know, grandmas of somebody who does musicals all the time, you know, or a spouse of somebody who does musicals all the time, you know, just kind of get a little bit of glimpse into that world.
I love it. I was not ever in theater growing up. I played travel hockey, so I was always on the road playing hockey. So it was like the one time, I don't even remember what it was or what I did, but I was a non-speaking, like, tree, essentially a tree, you know, type of thing. It's like, don't give him a line. He's not going to be in any rehearsals. I was like in second or third grade type of thing.
That's awesome.
So it is fun that, you know, there's different populations of the world that are going to, like, I am now here years later still doing this type of stuff, which is fun that everyone can enter and experience whatever point in their life that they find and whatever brings them to it. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So let's go into my rapid fire about the musical for you. I do want to ask a couple about the play, about the musical. So if you got to be in it, which character, which cat would you want to be?
Oh, what a good question. Gus.
Gus? Okay, so you want to give the
love
big...
Gus.
Okay, this is good for my final question, because I think Gus is the most common non-Grisabella answer we're going to get into, I'm sure.
Oh, is it?
Gus. We'll get there. Let's keep going with the rapid fire though. Who is your favorite character and least favorite character in the musical?
I think favorite is Rum Tum Tugger.
Super fun.
Okay, this you're gonna laugh at this. The character I like the least, I'm not even sure if she has a character name. I think she does. It's the all white cat, like the all white ballerina cat. Oh, is that it? Yes,
Victoria.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's someone. Yeah, I don't. She can go away.
Okay, so we're gonna pause the rapid fire because then we're gonna talk about the new movie, which I know you said you saw. They made her the vehicle for the new movie.
Right.
She was the storyteller of it.
Right.
What was your take on the new movie?
Well, the first thing is, I think it works if you're really stoned.
Absolutely.
Because it's so like freakishly surreal and like inconsistently freakishly surreal. So I did watch it really stoned. And I kind of loved it. I kind of loved the craziness of it. Like, it was just crazy. And you know, like, I'm already, you know, I already like the music and all that. I found it like super creepy, but like kind of in a good way.
Yeah.
I can't imagine watching it straight. I can't imagine watching it in a movie theater.
I was in a press viewing, again, sober. I just recorded an episode. I walked straight from the studio to the theater with my producer, and we went, and it was a filled theater. And I knew we were in trouble when it was a press viewing later on, like not the opening press one, but it was basically press and people that knew people in the show. So it's like, it should be a favorable audience.
Right.
And 10 minutes in, people were laughing at directly at the theater and not at funny parts. And that was when I was like, this is going to be an run when it goes live to the public, because if this group is laughing and struggling, the world is not ready for it.
Well, and my reaction, you know, on my couch with my actual cats watching, you know, I just kept going, oh, shit, oh, shit. But like, you know, like in a fun way.
I think your experience is where it has to go to have another life, which is Rocky Horror-ish.
Yeah. Yes.
Stoner Drunk. Yeah, go see it with a bunch of people that want to see it for that reason.
Yes.
I'm pushing for it. We got to give it a little bit of time, though. It needs to breathe a little bit before, because everyone's disassociated themselves from the movie.
Yeah,
including Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Everything was so awful. And, like, I even, you know, not stoned, I don't think it's awful. I think it's, like, kind of terribly misguided, maybe.
I thought it was poorly edited. Honestly, it was my biggest take of the whole thing. And I think there were some interesting decisions. There were some really smart decisions, and then a couple interesting decisions. And all in all, there's too much to go into. I have a whole episode. I did a very, like, right after I watched it recording the next day, where I broke down a lot of this stuff. And I've heard more behind the scenes now as it's come from other people that were loosely involved or talked to people that are involved. And I think there were a lot of errors in the overall piece, and it got rushed out. And, you know, now a lot of people think it's actually the reason that the pandemic started. Is, you know, the world turned the minute the Cats movie was released.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's some of the takes I've seen on the internet.
Nice.
Okay, what was your favorite song from the musical?
Well, I really do like Memory. It's a beautiful song. I think my favorite song is probably Skimbleshanks.
It's a unique, it's just a unique song. It's just very different, very upbeat.
I love explaining to people that it's in 13.
Yeah.
You know, you count it 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. And that's like, that's really cool. And
it's definitely different.
It gives you this sense of railroad, you know, of movement, of energy. I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a fun one to watch too. They build it all. It's like a very unique piece of the show.
I think my favorite lyric is Buster for Jones. It's just such a funny lyric. It's a very human lyric.
His song, if you read it, depends on how you read it, but it talks about going to gentlemen's clubs a lot. And it talks about going to, essentially, depending on how you interpret it, the way I interpreted it was, you've got a really rich guy, I think seems like backing the mob of McCavity, and is going to his gentlemen's clubs.
Yeah.
And living his best life as the kind of slobby, big, fat bachelor. So I found that one to be, like, again, it's a pretty dark premise, but I was like sitting there going, I've got Demeter potentially being abused. I've got one cat that's now funding a crime mafia and doing it out of a strip club. I that was where I was like, this show goes into a whole lot of layers I wasn't expecting.
Well, and that's what I love about the poems, that, you know, they are about cat behavior a lot, but they're totally about human personalities.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why it's relatable to a lot of people, is that you can see, hopefully not with like some of the crazy pieces of it, but you can relate to parts of almost all of them, but in a character that's, you know, a cat. It's non-binary. It's not male, female. It's a cat. And so I think that's an interesting part of this for sure.
And, you know, with the book, the second piece that I wrote was Razzle Jazzy, based on Grisabella. And it was because of the emotion of it. Like, you know, I feel so bad for Grisabella, the poor thing, you know, because she was glamorous once upon a time. And it was so exactly parallel to these women who are, you know, gorgeous chorus girls, and they get parts all the time, and they get older and older, and then they play the mother, and then they get older and older, and they still want to hold on to that young, you know, I'm beautiful, I'm a great dancer, et cetera, et cetera. But they're, you know, 40, 50 years older than that now, you know, and it's real human, and it's real sad. And I just saw this obvious parallel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the redemption story of her coming back, and we'll get there. I want one more rapid fire question, then we'll go to bait Grisabella here.
All right.
Which cat do you think would be the best author?
Which cat sings the Gumby song about Jenny Anydogs? Does she sing her own?
She sings some of it. I don't know who kicks it off though. It's probably one of the younger females.
Because I always feel like that's like one of the great story songs in the show.
Yeah, that was who I thought.
You could so imagine the story she's telling, you know?
Yeah, I my answer to this question while I was thinking about it was Jenny Anydots. I could see her writing an interesting, like, it's like almost like the children's stories. Like, she's writing my children's stories for me.
Yeah, yeah, she has a voice. She has a narrator voice that's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay, let's dive in now. We've kind of teased this a couple times. My whole show is about, I don't think Grisabella should be the Jellicle choice. And so it sounds like you think she should be, but I want to know if you're, you know, if you're Old Deuteronomy and you're picking at the ball, who are you selecting and why? And if it's Grisabella, I don't want to hear your defense for her. And if it's somebody else, I want to hear your defense for them.
Well, you know, I've always just assumed it should be Grisabella. And I think it's entirely out of pity. I mean, I don't think it goes beyond that. It's a poor thing, you know?
It's a redemption story. The arc is a...
What's the point? Why do they go to the Heaviside Lair? Like, do any of the other cats need that? I don't know.
So that's a great question. I think there's a couple questions. There's a lot of unanswered questions. I'm now way more episodes into this than I've ever thought I would think about this. But I think the number one question is, what is Old Deuteronomy's decision-making criteria?
Yes, yes, yes.
Because that is the root of this, because we only get one ball. You have one ball. Right. I don't have the year before, the year after. I don't know how this is graded, per se. And I think you bring up a good point, which I actually thought a lot about, which is, what is being the choice mean? I kind of always assumed it was, you deserve and you get to start your next life. But I think that that's an interesting piece of, like, maybe that's not actually it. Maybe it's...
Oh, so in other words, you've done a great job with this life. Now you graduate. Yeah.
Which is why most of the time a Gus or a Grisabella or some of the older cats is the ones that are thought of for this. I do think that that goes back to my original joke has always been, I think it's Tugger and Mistopheles, because I voted on based on the performances. I thought I treated it like a singing competition, and I thought, forget age, forget everything else, which ones were I entertained by the most? And it were those guys.
Right. And so you see it more as reward.
I do. Yeah. Which is funny when you think about it, it's also being potentially murdered. Like, it's like, which one are you going to kill?
Right. Right.
But I looked at it as a reward. I think it is a positive thing to be the choice.
Okay, see, I've never considered that. To me, it's always been, you know, who's ready to die.
Ah, okay. So we're taking this a different route. So you basically are thinking, like, Grisabella's life is so miserable, we got to put her out of her misery.
Not even that. It's her time.
It's time. Okay. So that would be the same argument for Gus, then. Would be, be there is okay.
Is and, like, you know, she, assuming the nine lives thing.
So in your version of your thought of this, are they coming back to a next life? Are they coming back to a new life, or are they done?
The Heaviside Lair is the next step.
Okay. Okay. So then in that scenario, I do think you have your two choices are Gus or Grisabella.
Yeah. To me, it was always Grisabella is so near death. You know, she's so fragile, so crumbling, that it's her time to die. It's not anybody else's time yet. And so she will go to the Heaviside Lair, and everybody's like, yay, because she gets a new life now.
So I agree and I disagree with that, because if you watch the 1998 movie, Gus is Sir John Mills. Okay. And he's blind by the time I read this later. He is blind when he's doing that performance, which is why they would walk him out.
Wow.
He is as frail as you can be watching him do that. If you go back to the 1998 movie and you watch it, he looks like he's on his last leg. And so it's like, I get Grisabella, like, but then you see a little bit of younger Grisabella belt out her song. Like, it's, if you watch that movie, I'm like, that's Gus is the one that looks like they're about to croak.
See,
and
but
Gus
for
is
me,
the one that might need it.
Between Grisabella and Gus, Grisabella gets a better song, the more emotional song. And so that's who I want to go to the Heaviside Lair.
Of course, you know, you belt out memory, you got to be the selection.
But it's such an emotional song, too, you know?
I have always kind of thought, the more I've thought about this a lot for the Grisabella argument, my whole thing was a joke to start, but if she is being brought back to the tribe and they're reaccepting her and it's really redemption, why can't she stay? Why can't she be next year's choice and get a year back with their family?
So my argument would be, only Old Deuteronomy knows this, but it is her time.
Yeah, well, that's no fun. that's the That's the problem here, is that that's just no fun. But I've made the Griswold argument. I get it. I'm, you know, I 40 plus years of a positive, you know, outcome of people coming to see this show. Like, we don't need to change it every day, but I think there's some arguments here.
I agree with you about Gus, though. He would be the obvious other choice.
Yeah, Gus is the most common. I've had some fun ones because I do think the criteria is what it boils down to. I loved one person made a joke that they thought is who is the biggest strain on the tribe, and that was, in their opinion, was Buster Jones. So it was like, so he needs to get out, which I thought was fun. I've heard some before, like
voting off the island.
yeah, like who's the strain on the tribe, and let's get him out. And that, like, that argument would also be McCavity. Like, there's your right. villain. Let's, like, get rid of our villain.
Yeah.
There's a couple other I've had, and there's some, you know, it's there's not a right or wrong. Well, there's probably a right version because Andrew Lloyd Webber and Chrissy and everyone who created the show made a decision, and I'm now critiquing it 40 years later. But it's been fun. I do think it's kind of like the beauty of the show is you get to see all those different personalities and hear how they kind of come up with stuff. So,
and everybody's life experience is going to interact differently with all those personalities, which is fun.
Exactly. Well, I have had a blast talking to you about this and also, you know, getting to read your book and kind of go through all that. What I would love to know, like, how can we direct people to the other stuff you've written, the other stuff you've worked on? I know I'll throw a link in the description to all of your books and how to kind of grab them.
Yeah. I've got an Amazon author page, so they're all there. Both serious books and silly books. I would encourage folks to come check out New Line Theater, the company that I run. I also keep a blog about our work at New Line and also about the art form. It's called The Bad Boy of Musical Theater.
Love it. Well, we'll link that as well. So you can, you know, in the description, go and keep up. And yeah, if you're in St. Louis or the Midwest, go check out New Line Theater.
And I have to say, in a couple of weeks, we're about to open Head Over Heels, which is just the most wonderful show.
Amazing. Well, hopefully this is, depending on when this releases and when this airs, hopefully people still have time to go see it. But thank you so much for being a guest. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. And
thanks, everyone else, for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.